This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Zoe Keating is a cellist and composer. With the help of a computer and a foot pedal, she loops and samples the music and sounds from her cello, building layer upon layer until she creates a cello symphony. It's a distinctive sound. Last month, she released her first new solo music since 2010, an EP called Snowmelt, which she describes as four songs from the end of a long winter. Keating moved from Burlington, from California to Burlington last year, but winter has more than one meaning in her music.
I moved to Vermont at the beginning of the last school year. My son just finished second grade, and we came from California, and, well, my husband died a few years ago, and my sister lives here. And so I was thinking, where can we go? And this seemed like a nice landing spot.
People who know your music and know of you will know that your husband died. It was something that was very public because you are such a public person. And people had come to rely on your blog and had come to know sort of intimate aspects about your life. And then this was a pretty different one that you were, of course, not expecting and not expecting to share. Has it been difficult to feel like people want to know about your life, even when you're going through the hard times?
Maybe this is true for anyone who's been through something like this. There's kind of a horror fascination that people have. They want to know, but they also want it to have a happy ending. You know, we all want a happy ending. It's always a balancing act. You know, how much do I share? How much do I withhold? I have to say that in the past, I was not very careful about what I shared and what I didn't share. My life and my work were really wrapped up. And I think, probably like any parent, that started to shift when I became a mom. And initially, I went through a period where I wasn't sharing that much. And then I started sharing more just as a mother because I wanted people to know that I was still working as an artist and I was traveling, and I was touring, and we were still doing this, and my creative life didn't stop. And I felt like actually in some ways my blog became like a PR vehicle to let people know that working moms exist in the creative arts. And then, of course, it's shifted again with this sort of, you know, my husband's illness, and it was his illness. It was happening to the whole family, but you know, some of it he didn't want me to share. And then since his death, I found that I've actually been sharing even less. I felt like a need to kind of figure out who I am again. We were together for almost 20 years and I didn't even know who I was. And I felt like that was a private experience that I needed to figure out. And so in some ways, the way I've used social media has shifted. And then, of course, we've had an election, and we have the world has turned upside down in the last couple of years. And the way that we all use social media is different. So long story short, it's always changing.
you did pull back, as you say. And after your husband Jeff's death, there was also a time where you weren't really making music. Was the music lost because the grief was overwhelming, or was the music gone for a time? I mean, was it that you couldn't find it, or it was just gone?
I would say that it was just too raw. My music is very much an expression of me. It's sort of just another dimension of myself. It was like I didn't have any skin. And so to make my own music was like to be there without any skin on. And it was too painful. I couldn't look directly at it. I was making music during that time, but it was entirely commercial music. I worked on two full TV series during that time and actually turned out a lot of music. But because it was a music to serve a story, even though it was me making it and you would recognize it as me, it was one step removed and I could write something really intense and painful because it was happening to a character on a screen, not to me. It was like I just needed to be one step removed. And I think anyone who's gone through an experience of intense grief will probably, you know that's such a raw time. I certainly had some worries for a while that I would never be able to write music again, like my own. I was certainly worried about that, which is a really great way to freak yourself out so you can't write music.
So how did you come back to it?
I think incrementally. And in some ways, it's my fans who really helped me. I think I rely on them a lot more than I ever realized. And one of the first things I did was to perform. And so about 8 months after he died, I had a performance and I was scared out of my mind. I was like, am I even going to be able to do this? So I told the audience, I just want you to know, I don't know if this is going to work and I might just dissolve into a puddle of tears. And then somebody yelled out, we love you, Zoe. And I think I did start to cry. And I was so worried about that, about the crying. It was fine. It was fine. I realized it was okay.
Yeah. Once you tell your audience you're vulnerable in some way, then it becomes okay to be so, and they're on your side.
Yeah, it was so obvious in retrospect. So I had that performance, and it was really liberating. I felt like, you know what? This doesn't define me at all. I'm still myself. I can still do this, and I can do it.
When you say it doesn't define you, what do you mean? I mean, it does define you in some ways, doesn't it?
I guess, well, I mean, like, the event didn't define me.
That your husband's death?
Yeah, like, I'm more multidimensional than that.
Yeah.
It's a part of me, and all of our stories make who we are, but it's not the only thing.
Mm-hmm.
And also that it made me feel like playing that performance, like, you know, it's possible. It's possible to, like, get through it somehow. So then I started actually making music kind of on stage the way I always have, where I improvise, I layer things up, I try things out. And that was really how the new music started to be made.
For people who don't know your music that well, you are a solo composer and solo performer for the most part, and you loop and layer various components using your cello, and you do it live to create this very layered, very multidimensional song that sort of morphs and changes as you make it live. So that's how you were doing the music, was that live performance?
I really started as a live artist, like playing music for people at parties at my house in San Francisco. I'd make kind of layered cello soundscapes and improvise on top of them and kind of make an environment of music. So I'm really comfortable with being on stage and not totally knowing what's going to happen. As I get more experienced, I have a tendency to make things really structured and organized. And so now, like, the vast majority of my songs are incredibly structured. But the new material always happens from this place of uncertainty and not knowing where something's going to go, which is a scary feeling. And so I think in some ways, being okay with that uncertainty musically really helped me in my personal life to be okay with uncertainty. Like, I don't know where things are going to go. I don't even know where I'm going to live. I don't know what life is going to be like. And sort of embracing that and just doing it incrementally. The thing about looping with music is that you make the music incrementally. You don't know what the result is going to be until you're doing it, because all those layers of cello together change the outcome. So it's like the only way to figure out where it's going to end is to do it. If that makes any sense.
Uh-huh. But I always wonder too, if you must have some idea of where you're going, because otherwise it could just become like a mess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I do make a mess sometimes.
Your new EP, Snowmelt, is the first music that you've put out, I think, since your husband's death, right?
Yes.
And the first song on the EP, Forte, mm-hmm. It starts with this single cello. And to me, it sounds like kind of a keening, mm-hmm. or a wailing. It really changes and it suddenly becomes more upbeat and confident. And then the other songs that follow it, the two songs that follow it, seem to be really more complex and more saying we're emotionally complicated. This is not as easy, you know, and it feels like this sort of grief that changes into an, okay, I've got this, and then, oh, wait a minute, life is really hard.
This is the great thing about being an instrumental musician, is that I love it when other people make the story. And it's hard for me to say what's true and what's not, because I'm very careful not to look at my own music too carefully. I just make it. And so sometimes I'll look back in retrospect at a piece and be like, oh yeah, that's what was happening. So there is an element of truth, I think, to what you're saying, but whether or not I was consciously there at it, I can't say. When I make music, I'm trying to make a world that I want to be in, and I really, really, really wanted to make a sense of hope musically. music is a way to like get some distance and some space and get a view of the horizon. And I've always used music that way, and I'm using it even more that way now. So if I've ended up making something that is kind of like, darn it, this is possible, that I'm sure that was the way I was feeling.
In fact, that's one of the titles of the song, Possible.
Yeah, yeah. Possible was an interesting song because that came about last year when I just sort of sat down and I was visiting a friend and I stayed in their house, and I had a concert the following week. And over the course of 3 days, I just made that piece of music. Then I was simultaneously working on this talk for TEDMED. I was like a little opening in my life, like, hey, you know, maybe this is possible, because this is how I used to make music. And so that's where that piece came from.
And you performed it in the TED Talk.
I did, yeah. It was nice having a deadline. I like deadlines.
The final song, Nyx, is interesting too, because again, it sort of brings in this keening, this wailing, but it also has other instrumentation,
yeah,
which is so different than what I'm used to hearing.
It's actually one of my son's toy little xylophones.
Ah, it has a very childlike quality.
Yeah,
to it.
They're all little, like some bells and things like that that are toys of his. I was thinking actually that came from Kepler's treatise on snowflakes, where Nix means nothing, and it also means some German dialect word for snowflake. The piece is in six because it's meant to be a six-sided snowflake. And so since I moved to Vermont, there's been a lot of snow. My plan is just to keep releasing EPs. And then the other thing is that I find it really hard to nail down the final version of a song. Like that song Forte, which starts out the EP, I have four different versions of that, and I couldn't decide which one to release. So I released my favorite today. As is usually the case, I release something and then I don't like it anymore. So I'll probably release another version of that, like on a full album.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe both those little musical children can live. You
maybe
know?
All four.
Maybe all four.
Well, Zoe Keating, I really appreciate you coming in and talking to us about your music. Congratulations on making more, and appreciate you talking about your life.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That was cellist and composer Zoe Keating. Her new EP is called Snowmelt, and you'll find links to her music and more at our website, vpr.net.